Who is your best friend? Think about that person and ask yourself, what makes that person a good friend? Do you enjoy the same activities? Hiking, playing football, reading novels, gardening, baking cookies? Are you similar in personality? Do you come from similar families? If you search on the internet for advice on making friends, you'll find an emphasis on such things. Enjoying similar activities, being from similar backgrounds, having similar personalities. Now, today's passage in Proverbs has much to say about friendship, but interestingly, it doesn't say anything about common interests, similar personalities, or family backgrounds. This passage tells us how to destroy a friendship, how to be a friend, and the impact of friendship on us. And we're going to use those three categories as our outline this morning: how to destroy friendship, how to be a friend, and the impact of friendship on us. But before we get to those themes, note that the view of friendship here in Proverbs is very broad. When you hear the word friend, what comes to your mind? Usually someone of similar age, the same sex, not a relative, not someone who's in an authority relationship with you, or someone who's under you, under your authority. But this passage about friendship includes verses like 27:11, "Be wise, my son, and make my heart glad, that I may answer him who reproaches me." In a passage about friendship, talking about the relationship of a father to a son. It includes a verse like verse 18, "Whoever tends a fig tree will eat its fruit, and he who guards his master will be honored." Talking about the relationship of an employee to an employer. It talks about marriage, husbands and wives. It talks about siblings. Now, as you've already heard, the discussion of those relationships is not always positive. A spouse or a sibling may be a great source of pain rather than a friend, a parent, or an employer may well control your life and try to take advantage of you rather than relate to you as a friend. But ideally, the marriage relationship should be the closest of all friendships. And ideally, brothers and sisters should be close friends all their lives. Ideally, as children become adults, they and their parents should become close friends. So as we study this passage, I want you to remember that. That when we talk about friends, think not only of your peer, but think also about your husband, wife, your brother, your sister, your father, your children, your employer, your employees. Think about that. Who is your best friend? Who can be a good friend who is not such a friend right now? What can you do about that? How to destroy friendship, then. Let's get to our first subheading. How to destroy friendship. Four ways to destroy friendship. The first way is pride. Verses 1 and 2. "Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring. Let another praise you and not your own mouth, a stranger and not your own lips." The word translated boast in verse 1 is the same as the word translated praise in verse 2, so we could render those phrases, "Do not boast about tomorrow, let another boast about you and not your own mouth." When you praise yourself, when you have a boastful confidence in what you will bring about in the future, what are you communicating to those close to you? You're saying, "I am in control. You benefit from my presence. I don't need you. Here, take from my largesse. Take of what I can give to you and provide to you. Such an attitude destroys friendship. Such an attitude might be that of a patron, of some higher order of being, but not a friend. You can't be a friend if you're full of boastful pride. A person who praises himself usually enjoys being praised by others. We see this in verse 21. The crucible is for silver. That's where you would burn silver to burn off all the impurities. The crucible is for silver. The furnace for gold, furnace serving a similar purpose, heat the gold so the impurities are burned off and all that's left is pure gold. The crucible is for silver, the furnace for gold, and a man is tested by his praise. A man is tested in the same way that you're testing the gold and the silver by heating it up. A man is tested by his praise. What does that phrase mean? In what ways does praise test us? We're tested both by the praise we receive and by what we praise. What we praise displays something about our character. But for our purposes here, let's focus on the first. When you are praised, how do you react? Do you act with pride? Do you react with congratulations? Do you think, well, you know, it's about time you notice that about me. Verse 14 provides an example. When others know that you like false praise, they will tend to praise you, hoping to get something from you. I think that's what's going on in this curious verse 14. Whoever blesses his neighbor with a loud voice rising early in the morning will be counted as cursing. This man is being tested by his praise. The picture is this. It's early in the morning, so no one's left home. Everyone's still around. And your neighbor rises, and he wants to get something from you. So he wants to let everyone know that he's praising you, that he's saying how great you are. And so with a loud voice, so everyone hears it, before people have left the houses, he's talking about how great you are. What's your reaction to that? That's a test. That's a test of your character. Who are you? Are you delighting in this false, obsequious praise, this praise which is coming from someone who simply wants to get something from you? Charles Bridges writes this on this verse. A loud voice and extravagant praises bring insincerity into question. When a man exceeds all bounds of truth and decency, affecting pompous words and hyperbolical expressions, we cannot but suspect some sinister end. Real friendship needs no such assurance. Well, the verse tells us that God will turn such a blessing into a curse. The proud man has no friend and eventually is under God's curse himself. Pride destroys friendship. Second way to destroy friendship, quarreling. Verse 3. A stone is heavy and sand is weighty, but a fool's provocation is heavier than both. Have you carried a bag of sand lately? It's quite surprising how heavy it is. If you've had to buy sand to fill a sandbox or to fix something with bricks in your yard, as we have had to do fairly recently, to pick up this bag of sand, it looks just like a small bag, but it is quite, quite heavy. And yet, this verse tells us that the provocation of a fool is heavier than the sand. Someone who provokes you is always stirring up quarrels. Have you tried to make friends with such a person? You may at times enjoy sharing a common activity, but this person is always looking at the negative. This person is always trying to egg you on. This person knows your buttons and tries to push them. A fool's provocation The worst examples of such provocation come in what should be our closest friendship, marriage. Verses 15 and 16. A continual dripping on a rainy day and a quarrelsome wife are alike. To restrain her is to restrain the wind or to grasp oil in one's right hand. The picture is as of yesterday morning with rain coming down and continuing, and you hear this drip in the house, drip, 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 and then it starts coming through your ceiling. And you know that you've gone out, you tried to find the source of the drip in the past, and you can not ever find it. But you know this water is coming in, and it is destroying your ceiling. It's going to destroy other parts of your house. And you just can't seem to be able to figure out what to do to stop it. That's what a quarrelsome wife, a foolish wife, who is provoking you constantly, is like. Looking to criticize always, never satisfied no matter what you do. And no matter what you say, she doesn't change. Just like the house that you know is being destroyed, you know your home, your marriage is being destroyed. Verses 7 to 8 tell us what then happens sometimes in such situations. One who is full loathes honey, but to one who is hungry, everything bitter is sweet. Like a bird that strays from its nest is a man who strays from his home. Honey in Proverbs is always thought of as good food, but if you're full of unhealthy food, you won't eat what is good for you. Thus the parent who says, don't eat that candy now, you'll spoil your dinner. Same idea. If you get full of what's not good for you, you're not going to want what is good for you. But if you don't have any food, if you're starving, you may grab whatever is available, even what is bad for you, even what is going to do you harm. And the man with a quarrelsome wife can be like that. Not having any love from his wife, not having any sustenance, he strays from his home to find what ultimately destroys him. Like that bird in verse 8, straying from its nest, straying from its place of protection, straying from its place of sustenance. He is foolish for straying from home, regardless of what the wife has done. She is foolish for quarreling, for provocation. But the point is this. All these verses work together to tell us that the quarrelsome person destroys friendship. The quarrelsome person makes friendship impossible. So pride destroys friendship. Quarreling destroys friendship. Two more sources of destruction, just very briefly. Third, jealousy. Verse 4. Wrath is cruel. Anger is overwhelming. But who can stand before jealousy? Wrath and anger in the midst of friendship are difficult. Wrath and anger in marriage are very destructive. When one friend or one marriage partner is always losing his temper, always flying off the handle, you cannot have a close friendship. But jealousy is even worse. Think of the different things that prompt jealousy. If one is jealous of the other's accomplishments, then there's never any commendation, never any congratulations. The more one friend succeeds, the more the other feels worse and worse. Or jealousy of other friends. So that the more one person is built up through another friend, the worse the first friend feels. And the jealousy gets larger and larger, destroying the friendship. Jealousy in the end is an attempt to control, to manipulate the other person, to keep that person in your clutches and no one else's. To keep that person exactly as he or she is today and not advancing and becoming better. And a true friend will not be jealous. Finally, fourthly, dissatisfaction. Verse 20. Sheol and Abaddon are never satisfied, and never satisfied are the eyes of man. Sheol and Abaddon, pictures of hell, of death. So the first part of the verse is simply saying, the grave is never full. The door to hell is never closed with a sign that says, there's no place remaining, go someplace else. Just so, the eyes of man are never satisfied. In many ways, never satisfied with money. We've talked about that in the last few months. Never satisfied with ambition. No matter how much power and status you attain, you always want more. But for our purposes this morning, never satisfied with their friend. Never satisfied with their husband. Never satisfied with their wife. You can be in a relationship where you give and give and give and give, and the person always wants more than you can give. In the context of marriage, Paul Tripp writes this, people whose eyes are just on a good marriage will end up devouring each other because the marriage alone cannot ever satisfy. You will be a parasite on your mate, sucking his or her blood, but he or she will never, ever give you enough. Never satisfied are the eyes of man. Dissatisfaction consumes friendship. Consumes friendship. So that's another way that we can destroy friendship. So we can learn from these ways to destroy friendship some lessons about how to be friends. We need to fight pride. We need to fight our quarrelsome spirit. We need to fight against jealousy. We need to fight against dissatisfaction. The way we do that is cultivating humility instead of pride, cultivating being a peacemaker instead of a quarrelsome person, cultivating trust instead of jealousy, cultivating self-control instead of dissatisfaction. Other verses in this chapter expand on these ideas and clarify them. So let's now look at four ways to be a friend. First of all, a friend gives faithful wounds. Verses 5 and 6. Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Profuse are the kisses of the enemy. Now we just said that we want to fight against a quarrelsome spirit. We want to be a peacemaker. But in trying to fulfill that, some become reluctant to say anything that might be hurtful. Anything that might provoke an angry response. But that is not the true friend. That is not the true friend. The true friend will take those risks of saying something that might hurt, if that wound which is then produced is a faithful wound, if that wound that is then produced is a redemptive wound. A true peacemaker is willing to risk angering his friend. And sometimes the truth does indeed hurt. They are wounds, after all. But when they are spoken in love, when they are spoken with care and concern, when they are spoken in the context of a loving relationship of trust, when they are not spoken in pride, not with a quarrelsome spirit, but in humility, then those wounds can be faithful wounds which build us up, not tear us down. We want to be people at Desiring God Church. We want to be people who invite loving criticism. We want to be people who give loving criticism. In giving, we do have to be humble, right? We have to realize that our perception of the situation might very well be wrong. We are not the judge of our friend. We must not speak out of pride. We must not think that we know this person better than he or she knows him or herself. But when we speak out of humility and what we've seen in another person's life that is not right, When we speak about things that we think are dishonoring to God, such words are faithful indeed. First way to be a friend gives faithful wounds. Secondly, a friend gives earnest counsel. Verse 9. Oil and perfume make the heart glad, and the sweetness of a friend comes from his earnest counsel. Think back to your best friend that you identified at the beginning of this sermon. What about your friend is like perfume to you? What about your friend just makes you feel wonderful? What is the sweetness of your friend? His or her sense of humor? Your shared interests? This proverb says that the best sweetness is her earnest counsel. Or literally, the counsel of the soul. Such counsel is not just advice that comes off the top of your head. Not answering your questions and problems with pat answers, but speaking earnestly from a humble heart, out of love, out of concern, from after deep thought, speaking wisdom to the situation, giving good counsel. That's sweetness. That's sweetness. You may agree with the counsel, you may not. But when it comes from a heart that loves you, that has thought deeply about the problem, it's sweet, sweet to hear. 5 years ago, when we were asking the question whether or not God was calling us to go to Cameroon, and we had numerous delays in our correspondence with the seminary, and it seemed like it was not God's plan for us to go. And then we heard from the seminary 1 week, and it was so late, we had to make a decision very quickly. I woke up on the day that our decision was to be made, and Beth and I looked at each other and thought, we're not going to go to Cameroon. And I told one of my fellow elders in that church of this, and he said, Cody, I really want to come pray with you about this and talk with you some more. And so he came over, and we went for a walk, and he really gave me such earnest counsel from his heart. And at first, I didn't agree with him. I was listening because we had a good relationship. We loved each other. We'd known each other for 10 years at that point. But as he spoke and as we prayed, even when he left, I didn't accept his counsel, but agreed that I'd spend one more night praying about it, thinking about it. The next morning, Beth and I woke up, looked at each other, and said, we're going to Cameroon. And how much of what's happened in my life since then was a result of the earnest counsel of my friend. He didn't have to do that. He could have said, well, Cody's made his decision, and so there's not really anything else I can say now. But he came. And it wasn't, they weren't words of rebuke. It wasn't a faithful wound. This was just earnest counsel from the heart. Are there people that you need to give such counsel to today? In your family? Amongst your friends? That's sweetness. Sweetness. If God uses you to change the course of a person's life, even in something minor, it may not be a big, huge decision like it was for us. But even in something minor, even if they disagree in the end, even if they don't take your counsel, it can be real sweetness to speak from your heart to that person. Again, not out of pride, but out of love and care. Third, a friend accepts praise. We already looked at verse 2 from one side. Let's look at verse 2 now from the other side. Let another praise you and not your own mouth, a stranger and not your own lips. This verse is saying, do not praise yourself, but it's also saying, accept genuine praise from another. Now, some people act as if humility means when someone praises you, you deny it. And just don't accept any praise. But let another praise you. Let a stranger praise you. You know anyone like that who, whenever you try to say something good about them or praise them, they always deny it and they always belittle themselves? That's not acting as a friend. It's not acting as a friend. If your friend appreciates you and you make light of that appreciation, in effect, you are rejecting your friend. So simply say, thank you. Praise God for His grace. That's sufficient. Accept the praise that is given to you from a heart that is sincere. So a friend gives faithful wounds, a friend gives earnest counsel, a friend accepts praise. Fourth, a friend cultivates nearness. Now this is one we have to think about a little bit. Verse 10. Do not forsake your friend and your father's friend, and do not go to your brother's house in the day of your calamity. Better is a neighbor who is near than a brother who is far away. Now first of all, he's not saying avoid your brother, okay? He's not only saying someone needs to be physically near to help. What he's saying is, depend on that old family friend. Depend on someone who has been a friend to you. The same person who's been a friend to your father. This old family friend. He is reliable. He is trustworthy. He is near. But this word near is not used only of physical proximity. Let me read to you Deuteronomy 4:7. You don't need to turn there. For what great nation is there that has a God so near to it as the Lord our God is to us whenever we call upon Him? What does it mean to say God is near us there? It means that there's some unity between us and God. Such a unity that we know that when we call on Him, He is going to come. He is going to be there. He is going to help. And that's, I believe, what this word near means here in this verse. Better is a neighbor who is near than a brother who is far away. Physically nearer, maybe so, doesn't really matter. What's more important is spiritual nearness. Being of one mind, of one heart. And if your brother is of one mind and one heart with you, then go to your brother by all means. But what he's saying is that that friend who is of one mind and one heart with you is nearer, in that sense, than a brother. And so go to that friend. Who is near to you? Who is ready, willing, and able to help you in time of need? Whose heart is bound up with yours? Who has the same interest as you so that your interests are his or her interests? This nearness does not come from blood relationships, though it can accompany a blood relationship. This nearness does not come automatically in marriage, though it should accompany marriage, that it comes from cultivating friendship over a long period of time. Look at verses 23 to 27 in this context. These verses are not obviously about friendship, but I think we can apply them to friendship. Let me read them to you. Know well the condition of your flocks, and give attention to your herds, for riches do not last forever, and does a crown endure to all generations? When the grass is gone, and the new growth appears, and the vegetation of the mountains is gathered, the lambs will provide your clothing, and the goats the price of a field. There will be enough goat's milk for your food, for the food of your household, and the maintenance for your girls. Now, at one level, this seems to be just good advice about taking care of your animals and the advantages of animals over annual crops. And certainly it is true in that sense. If you live in an agricultural society, it makes sense to have some animals and to take good care of them. But notice in verse 24, the second half, there's something that seems a little out of place there. Does a crown endure to all generations? What does that have to do with keeping animals? I think that phrase warrants our taking this agricultural picture and broadening it. That phrase itself, in context of Proverbs, which speaks a lot about kings and crowns, I think it's specifically referring to the king taking care of those that he shepherds, his flock, his people, his countrymen, and providing that same sort of care over his flock. Why? Because a crown doesn't endure forever. You may not be king next week, or next month, or next year, and then what will the people think of you? But let's broaden that yet more. In any authority relationship, or even a non-authoritative relationship between friends, are you cultivating that friendship? Are you watching out in an authority relationship for your children, for your employees, or even husband for wife? Are you cultivating them? Are you seeing that they are healthy and growing and thriving and thinking clearly, and coming to see God and follow Him, and growing spiritually? Are you doing that for your friend, for your employee, for your children, for your wife? This is a strong exhortation to cultivate, to develop those who are in your care, to feed them, to help them grow, and to say, in your time of calamity, they will be near. They will be near. They will be of one heart and of one mind with you. A friend cultivates nearness. So a friend gives faithful wounds. A friend gives earnest counsel. A friend accepts praise. A friend cultivates nearness. Finally, the impact of friendship. Two impacts, I think, are brought out in these verses. First, friendship sharpens us. Friendship builds our character. Verse 17 is well known. Iron sharpens iron, and one man sharpens another. I put a different translation on the front of your bulletin. The word friend actually appears. The Hebrew word for friend is in this verse. The translators leave it out in the interest of making it succinct English. But when they translate it more literally, it reads, iron is sharpened with iron, and a person sharpens the face of his friend. Well, with this translation, we get the word friend in there, which is valuable to us. But what does it mean to say he sharpens the face of the friend? I don't think it means your nose gets longer and more pointed. The picture is of a knife or a sword or an axe being sharpened by an iron sharpening stone. So you've got the sharpening stone, and you've got your axe, and you're going back and forth with the sharpening stone, making it sharper and sharper. That's what a friend does for you. And the Hebrew word for face is used occasionally to mean the edge. In Ecclesiastes 10:10, the edge of an axe. And so the image is of making you sharper so that you are more effective at the tasks that God has in store for you. A sharp axe is much more useful than a dull axe. And when you sharpen your friend, you make him that much more useful. You sharpen him through your earnest counsel, through your faithful wounds, through cultivating that relationship. God uses our friends to mold us and make us into what He intends us to be. He sharpens us through each other. Second impact of friendship, verse 19. As in water, face reflects face, so the heart of man reflects the man. A man. There's some ambiguity in the Hebrew. The New Revised Standard Version draws out one meaning that I think applies particularly to friendship, so let me read that translation to you. Just as water reflects the face, so one human heart reflects another. One human heart reflects another. Those around you, particularly your closest friends, those who have been sharpened by you, show who you are. They reflect you. You've had an impact on their life. And so, they display their character in what you become. And this is especially true in the home, especially true in marriage, especially true between parents and children. Your character is revealed by what your wife, your husband becomes. After a decade of marriage, two decades, more of marriage, how have you changed because this person is in your life? That reveals something about that person, about the character of that person. In our teaching on marriage, we highlight four aspects of the relationship between Christ and the church that move over into marriage. Unity, love, headship, submission, and perfection. Christ perfects His church. And in a good marriage, God uses the husband to perfect the wife. He uses the wife to perfect the husband. What is your impact on your husband or your wife? What is your impact, mothers and fathers, on your children? What is your impact, all of you, on your friends? Have you just given them some good times that you've, by doing things together that you enjoy? Is that your impact on your friends? Or are they more Christ-like because you are in their lives? Are they more gracious? Are they more loving? Are they more concerned for other people because you are in their lives? Do they know God more closely than they would if you had never entered their lives? Are they following Jesus? Are they delighting in Him more fully because of the impact you have had on them? Are their marriages stronger because of who you are? May we build friendships and thus be sharpened to fulfill God's purposes. And may we display who we are by God's grace through our influence on our friends. Let's go back to our first question. Who is your best friend? A peer? An employer or an employee? Your brother or your sister? Your mother or father? Your son or daughter? Who's your best friend? Your husband? Your wife? For me, that's easy to answer. There's no question that Beth is my best friend. We can go through the qualities we talked about. She's humble. She's a peacemaker. She trusts me fully. She displays self-control. She gives faithful wounds and earnest counsel. She accepts praise. She cultivates nearness. Her impact on me has been profound, helping me to see Jesus, to love Him, helping me to become the husband and father that God intends me to be. As far as I still have to go, and although sin is still so apparent in my life, she has been used by God to sharpen me into a useful instrument for God's purposes. If I can manage it, in 4 weeks I'm going to preach on the excellent wife and talk to you more about her. But there's a better friend for me than Beth, for apart from him, Beth would be my enemy. Do you long for a close friend? Remember, verse 20 tells us that the eyes of man are never satisfied, and our desire for friendship is never satisfied, is never fulfilled with any friend on earth, not the best wife, not the best husband. Every friend disappoints us. And ultimately, there is only one who can satisfy that longing for intimacy, that longing for clear, close friendship, and that is God Himself through Jesus Christ our Lord. Augustine said, "Thou hast made us for Thyself, and our heart can have no rest till it rests in Thee." Charles Bridges writes, "In Him our desires are at once increased and satisfied. A fountain of infinite fullness is at our door. When new created in the image of God and made capable of communion with Him in grace and of enjoying Him in glory, can our desires be satisfied with anything less, with anything beside? Is He not now our supreme delight, our satisfying object, never leaving us without complete satisfaction for a single moment?" This ultimate satisfaction, this supreme delight, is available to you. You can be a friend of God. How are you doing in cultivating that friendship? How are you doing in giving attention to that relationship? Are you setting aside the time to know Him better through His Word, to communicate with Him through prayer? Are you channeling your affections towards Him? Come to Him. Come to God the Father through Jesus Christ the Son. See Him as your friend. Come to the One who, while we were sinners, died for us. Come to the One who has taken away the judgment against you. Come to the One who will quiet you with His love. Come to the One who will perfect you and thus rejoice over you forevermore. Come to Him. Bow before the Lord of the universe and delight in the love of your best friend.